Samadhi verses start from Yam Labdhva Chaparam Labham Itro Paramate Chittam Yuduktam Yoga Sevaya. So we are today about to start from the section of Yam Labdhva Chaparam Labham. So what is happening? We discussed about the different kinds of Samadhis, Asampragyant and Sampragyant. Remember those two words? So that which involves the subject, that which involves first Savitarka and Savichara. So when there is external Samadhi and there is deep absorption, so it's interesting that even when the focal concentration is focused externally, directed externally, still it is called a Samadhi. So we normally may have a conception that Samadhi means one has to be completely inwardly directed. Not necessarily. Samadhi basically means one is one-pointed, focused. So, ekagrata and nirodha. You remember the three, five stages? There was a mudha, vikshipta, mudha, kshipta,
vikshipta,
ekagrata and nirodha. So, ekagrata and nirodha, both are actually considered to be stages which are potential for samadhi. So as one becomes more and more ekagrata, more and more focused, and that's samadhi. So that means even if one is focused on an external object, that is also samadhi. So sometimes when they're going in buses or cars or trains and you see people watching a cricket match, so especially the final overs of the cricket match are there, the people are in samadhi. They're completely absorbed, isn't it? Or my devotees had to go to shop to purchase something, and there's a TV outside the shop, and the people crowded around, and he just wanted to go inside, but the people were not ready to let him go. You know, they did not want to miss one moment of the action that was being displayed on the television. So afterwards he was telling him, then I started the Gopi saying, we don't want our eyes to close for even one animation. So it is a distortion of that. So actually what happens is, what is the ultimate basis of samadhi? It is ultimately strong attraction. At one level, when the mind becomes completely peaceful and devoid of passion, then the mind can become steady. But when will the mind become focused? Then there is strong attraction. And there is strong attraction. At that time, the mind becomes completely focused. So, that is the level of samadhi which results not just from the freedom from passion, but that is the samadhi which results from love. So, it is said that Krishna beholds Radharani. Actually, Krishna's flute falls away from his hand. And his peacock feather falls away from his head. He's so absorbed, so captivated by her. So, that is also one level of absorption. That is ultimately due to love. So, in both the parts of Dhyan Yoga and the path of Bhakti Yoga, the ultimate goal is absorption. In both parts, the ultimate goal is absorption. But the trajectory is different. The trajectory means the journey along, the pathway by which the journey is undertaken. So, on the path of Yoga, what is Chitta Nivritti Yoga. Yogas Chitta Vritti Nirodha. So Patanjali defines yoga as Chitta Vritti. Chitta Vritti is the movement of consciousness. Nirodha. When one brings about a cessation, a stoppage of the movement of consciousness, that is the success of the path of yoga. So that is fine at one level as far as it goes. But beyond that, there has to be some positive activity. So, the emotions in this world, we need to dovetail and connect them. But generally, the emotions
are what cause bondage.
So, two ways of dealing with emotions on the path of transcendence.
So, in the path of Dhyan Yoga, what do they do? Just silence and stop the emotions.
And then?
In the path of Bhakti Yoga, we kindle spiritual emotions.
So unless there is a... So Dhyana Yoga, of course, it stops ultimately only all material emotions. But in, because Ishvara is not described positively, because who Krishna is and how he is all attractive is not described in the path of yoga. So therefore, it is difficult for them to develop positive emotions. So we had Maharaj's friend, this Professor Haberman, who had come here. You were telling that Prem Dasji, what do devotees want? We want a commotion of emotion in the ocean of devotion. The commotion of emotion in the ocean of devotion. The idea is devotees don't just want peace. If people think that we just want peace, actually our morning Guru Puja is not at all peaceful. It may seem very noisy, but it is not just noisy, it is actually transcendental. It is not noisy like material level. So, Krishna, because he has not yet introduced himself directly, is not talking about samadhi in those terms. But still, the principle remains that this is only one pathway to samadhi. And another pathway to samadhi is actually easier. Because to just silence all the emotions, is not at all easy. So, pashyan atmani tushyati, delights within. So, actually speaking, when Krishna departed from the gopis' presence during the Ras Leela, at that time, it was a traumatic moment for them. Suddenly Krishna was there and he looked around and Krishna was gone. At that time, the gopis were almost felt as if burning arrows had pierced through their chest and they felt that there was no point in living. They started frantically searching everywhere. Ananda and Jambu described this pastime extremely intensely. And when Krishna went with Radharani, it was not that actually the gopis were proud, but it was Yogamaya arranged that the world should know the special glory of Radharani. And that Krishna took alone her away. So that she is the supermost among all the gopis. And then as Krishna was going with Radharani, Radharani was so happy that Krishna is with me alone. And then suddenly she thought, but what about all my associates? All my sakhis, how heartbroken they will be. And how can I enjoy Krishna's presence if they are not there with me, if they are suffering? She started thinking, what should I do? And she thought that Krishna is taking me deep inside the forest. We should slow down so that the other gopis will catch up with us. And so to slow down, she said to Krishna, Krishna, I am very tired. You know, I cannot move forward. So she wanted to have some talk by which she will slow down. And then Krishna apparently felt that. So Radharani said that, you know, I can't go forward anymore. If you want me to go forward, it's not possible for me to walk. I'm very tired. So then Krishna apparently got angry. And Krishna said, you know, because this is a forest, I cannot get a palanquin for you. So you climb on my shoulders. And then as Krishna said, suddenly Krishna disappeared. When Krishna disappeared, Radharani was devastated. And as the other gopis were searching, they saw there are these footprints. And then they saw there are two pairs of footprints. One they could make out as Krishna, and then there is some special gopi. Who is this gopi? And they were just completely maddened. And before they detected those footprints, they were all enacting Krishna's pastimes. So Ananda Jipu describes that they enacted those pastimes which would evoke the remembrance of Krishna among them. So one gopi became Kaliya, another gopi became Krishna, and he started dancing on the shoulder of Kaliya. And another gopi, they started performing Krishna's butter-stealing pastimes. And by enacting those pastimes, they were completely into samadhi. They were completely oblivious to the external world. And although the enactment of the pastimes brought them some relief, but at the same time, still they wanted Krishna's association. And they felt, now we cannot live anymore. And suddenly at that time, as if miraculously they felt, they saw those footprints in the ground. As if the footprints had dropped from the sky there. But actually they were themselves so absorbed in enacting Krishna's pastimes, they just couldn't see anything. And then suddenly he saw this. Before that, they were asking everyone. They were asking the trees, they were asking the shirdiya, they were asking the tulsi plant. Oh, where is Krishna? Have you seen Krishna? And finally, when they came, they started going after the food and they saw, who is this fortunate gopi? And initially, they felt a little envious of her. Actually, that envy was all transcendental. But then, when finally they saw that Krishna, that gopi is also been abandoned by Krishna. And whatever negative feeling that they had, it all disappeared. And then this gopi had fallen unconscious. Radharani and Sabrishma Krishna had fallen unconscious. But she had no intention of being proud. But actually, Krishna had thought of her as proud. So, two things that devastated Radharani. First is that the thought that Krishna has left me. And second is, not only has Krishna left me, but Krishna is thinking that I am proud. That double devastation was too much for Radharani to bear. And then she had fallen unconscious. So actually for her, unconsciousness was a relief, because consciousness was such a torment, intolerable torment for her. So then the gopis came and sprinkled some water and spoke to her. And then, so all this is described in the 30th chapter. And then the gopis go as deep as possible in the forest. And there, they go so deep in the Raja forest that even the moonlight doesn't come in. They feel, they can't see anything over here. So even if Krishna is there, how can we see him? So then they come back out of the forest, they come to the banks of the Jamuna, they sit over there, and then 31st chapter describes how they recite the Gopi Gita. And then at the end of it, Krishna appears again. So actually the gopis are in a stage of samadhi, complete absorption in Krishna. And that is what Uddhava appreciates when he sees the gopis. He says, what kind of perfection have you attained? He says that this, you are supremely praiseworthy among all living beings. And he says, I want to become a gulman, I want to become a weed in the forest of Vrindavan, so that I can get the best of your lotus feet. So the gopis are the ultimate examples of samadhi. What is samadhi for them? They are just completely absorbed, not in just contemplation of some inner light. They are absorbed in the remembrance of Krishna's personal beauty and personal features. And that same absorption was demonstrated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, this is the Gaudiya Vishnu revelation of what is the ultimate summit of samadhi. So, in samadhi also there can be different levels of samadhi. So, a yogi will have a particular level of samadhi depending on how much he is perceiving the super soul. So, the perception of the super soul is one level of samadhi. The absorption in Krishna and Aishwarya Bhava is one level of samadhi. The absorption of Krishna in Vrajabhava, in Madhurya Ras, is like that in the hierarchy, the ultimate level of samadhi. So, Krishna is ultimately hinting at that level of samadhi in the Bhagavad Gita, in this particular context. So, the gopis were not sitting in yogic postures. We know that the gopis tried to sit in yogic postures. They said, sat for their what purpose? Forget Krishna. They said, you know, if Krishna can live without us, we can also live without him. They will close their eyes and sit for meditation. And suddenly, one of the gopis will speak something about Krishna. And all the others will start speaking. They will be completely engrossed. And as they are speaking about Krishna, they say, we are supposed to forget Krishna. What happened? So that's how, for them, they were riding on a wave of emotion that took them to Krishna. The crest and the drops and all that wave of emotion, all of them are transcendental. That's why the whole conception of Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu is very special. It's a Sindhu. It's an ocean. Normally, ocean is talked about often in negative terms in the scriptures. There's Bhava Sagara. And the whole purpose is like Bhagavad Gita will say later, Tesham Aham Samadharta Mrityu Samsara Sagara. So, the whole purpose is to come out of the Sagara. But the Sagara is very terrible. So, it's like there is one big Bhava Sagara. And one comes out of it, and then there's a coast. That coast is the immortality, that is Brahman. But once one goes beyond that coast, there is another sagara. And it is a bigger sagara. And the perfection of life is not just to come and stay on the coast, but to dive and drown in the ecstasy of the other sagara. So Bhakti Samvit Sindhu is, he gives the same analogy that even if somebody says that the drop of ocean will merge into the ocean of, drop of water will merge into the ocean of water. He says there are fish who don't merge into the ocean. So like that, in the Bhakti Sagara, in the ocean of devotion, the devotees dive and swim, and they go deeper and deeper and get deeper and deeper ecstasy by that. So that is the path of Bhakti Yoga. that although the emotions are obstacles in the path of bhakti, but emotions can also become means to perception. This is an important point to understand.
See, for analysis, emotions are obstacles. For aesthetics, emotions are essentials.
What is the difference between analysis and aesthetics? Analysis means if I am a botanist and if I am studying a flower, then what do I have to look at? Okay, it has, this is the petal, this is the corolla, this is the androecium, this is the gynoecium. And when a biologist studies a flower, the whole focus is on analyzing it into its parts. Okay, what are these made up of? These are stamens, these are carpels. And one goes deeper and deeper into that analysis. So now, when a person has a biological vision, the focus is not on relishing the beauty of the flower. In fact, oh, this flower is so beautiful, I cannot cut it to see what is there inside it. So then, biology cannot be studied. If a person wants to relish the flower, then, actually speaking, he has to have emotions. Now, if a person has a dry, unemotional vision, then a person cannot have any aesthetic appreciation. Cannot have aesthetic appreciation, just like cricket. I'll give that example. If somebody who is from America doesn't know about cricket, that person cannot appreciate cricket at all because there are no emotions involved in it. So, now cricket, there may be some analysis, but ultimately it's a matter of emotions. Now, it's not that in everything, it is emotions are, analysis and aesthetics are not entirely separated. Even a biologist may have some aesthetic appreciation of nature. And even an artist may do some analysis. Okay, this painting, I should put this much color in it, I should put this much color in it, I should use this canvas, I should use this kind of medium. That's fine. But broadly, science requires analysis. And the arts require aesthetics. So, the spiritual object, the Krishna as the absolute truth, as Bhagavan, Krishna as Brahman is an analytical object. But Krishna as Bhagavan is an aesthetic object. And that's the fundamental difference.
Absolute truth as Brahman is an analytical object. But the absolute truth as Bhagavan Krishna is an aesthetic object.
Without an aesthetic appreciation, one cannot relish Krishna's beauty, one cannot relish Krishna's sweetness, one cannot relish anything about Krishna practically. Especially when we are talking about personal reciprocations. Relationships are all based on emotions. There may be some analysis, but primary is emotions. So, why is it that the path of yoga cannot take one in and of itself to Bhagavan? Because the path of yoga is based primarily on analysis. Analysis. Emotions are obstacles for analysis. For example, if you want to, if something has been stolen from a room, but who has stolen it?
Somebody stole it. How could they have stolen it? This is so wrong. This.
If a person becomes very emotional, he cannot think, okay, if he stole it, where could he have come? Where could he have gone? Who could have done it? If I have to do all that analysis, I have to check my emotions. So for analysis, emotions are obstacles. And most of the times, actually, analysis will detach us from the material world. So analysis is good. For example, say a man gets attracted to the body of a woman gets attracted to a man. So for everyone else, actually, thy body is made of the same elements as my body. You know, if touching my body doesn't give me any pleasure, it is not that some other body has some magical pleasure-containing substance. By touching it, it will give me some pleasure. So this analysis is what jnanis do. And that is good, as far as it goes. So, even in the path of bhakti, for example, we have this whole story of liquid beauty. So the whole point is analysis. Now, how this body that you are attracted to, it just contains such foul-smelling substances. So don't get attracted to it. So that whole thing is analysis. Now, how does the whole male-female attraction will flourishes because of emotions? If people did analysis, then it would not continue for very long. As they say, love is blind, but marriage is an eye-opener. So it's an eye-opener. So the point is that, actually speaking, even material life, if there's too much analysis, the relationships cannot develop. The mother does not analyze the child. The mother loves the child. Okay, why the child becomes like this? You may try to analyze a little bit. The primary relationship is with emotions. So, if somebody is ugly, then the polite way to tell that he is ugly is only his mother can love him. What that means is, actually mother will love the child no matter how he is. So only mother can love him. So like Maharaj Veena was there, you know, even the Brahmins rejected him. Brahmins are supposed to be very forgiving. Brahmins also rejected him. But his mother Suniti, what did she do? She preserved his body. And then the Brahmins churned that body, and that's how they were able to get Maharaj Putra to appear. So the point is that even in material life, there is a role for aesthetics and there is a role for analytics. Now, generally speaking, to some extent, if you want to proceed, some vairagya is required, especially in brahmachari life. And that's why analysis is important. So, the whole pastime of Chitraketu Maharaj is what? You know, don't be so emotional. Actually, it's the fire of emotions is burning in the heart of Chitraketu. And the son comes back and he just pours truckloads of water on the emotions. Which father? Which mother? I had millions of fathers and millions of mothers. So actually, Vishwanathji Thakur describes that when Narad Muni does the mystical trick, what he does is actually, Narad Muni, he himself enters into the body of that child and he speaks in the voice of that child. That's why when he speaks, the child speaks in the mode of an adult. Solid philosophical knowledge. So, the point is that at that time, the emotions are leading a person to illusion, to lamentation. So then the emotions have been stopped. So there is analysis. So if you see in the Bhagavata, most of the time there is analysis to produce detachment. But analysis in and of itself cannot take us to attachment to Krishna. Like some people ask, you know, why does Krishna wear a feather? Why does Krishna play a flute? Why is Krishna's complexion blue? Why does Krishna love cows? Why is Krishna Gopa? Well, if Krishna likes milk and milk products, buffaloes also give milk. Krishna is Gopa, Krishna is not Bhaiswa.
It's not that Krishna doesn't like buffaloes. There are a few buffaloes also in the spiritual world.
But why is Krishna Gopa? There is no need for any symbolic meaning interpretation for this. We understand that God is a person, and as a person, He has His likes and dislikes. Now, sometimes there are some stories told for certain things. For example, one time Krishna was playing in the forest and he saw a peacock. And he started chasing the peacock. And he started chasing the peacock, and the peacock ran and ran and ran. The peacock ran all the way to Barsana. And then that's how Krishna got to go to Barsana, and Krishna met Radharani over there. So then he was very pleased with the peacock. He says, "Here, united with my beloved, therefore, as the peacock was running, one feather of his had fallen down." So Krishna took that feather and put it on his bird. The stories may be told, but these stories are fine. But this is not essential. It's Krishna's personal choice. So we don't need to do any further analysis. The acharyas have done it, they have told some story, that's fine. But ultimately, we know that Krishna is a person. So relationships flourish based on aesthetics, not on analytics. So on the path of bhakti yoga, we do analysis to get detached from material life to some extent. But beyond that, ultimately it's all about aesthetics. Now we have to offer our heart to Krishna. So the path of yoga flourishes by analysis. Whereas the path of bhakti, there may be analysis having a role in it, but it's primarily an aesthetic appreciation of Krishna. At the level of tattva, there is no difference between Vishnu and Krishna. And we don't have to emphasize the differences. In fact, in Sanatana Goswami's Brihat Bhagavatamrit, when the Gopa Kumar, can you close that? No, the outer ring. So in Sanatana Goswami's Brihat Bhagavatamrit, when the Gopa Kumar goes to Vaikuntha, actually in Vaikuntha, the Vaikuntha Vasis think that Vishnu is supreme and they think Krishna is a mere incarnation of Vishnu. So that is not just a conception here among some people, that is there in Vaikuntha also. And that is perfectly acceptable. Sanatana Goswami doesn't go into a reactional mood and say, hey, you are wrong. You are Vaikuntha Vasis, but you are wrong. So I will correct you philosophically. Because ultimately, it's a matter of rasa. It's a matter of rasa. So a devotee will naturally feel that my Lord, the manifestation which I am worshipping the Lord is the best. And devotee should feel like that. So we have Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealing both aspects. We see there was one Ram Bhakta was chanting the name of Ram, 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 and then he came back, Chaitanya was always chanting the name of Krishna. The other Ram Bhakta was so afflicted at the thought that Sita had been abducted, touched and abducted by Ravana, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased with it. And he came back and brought the Kurma Puran. He brought the scriptural reference about Maya Sita to pacify him. So we have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu having Murari Gupta as a Ram Bhakta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fully accepted him as that. Glorified him for his devotion, single-minded to Lord Ram. And similarly, Anupam Sanatana's brother was also Ram Bhakta. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu glorified him for that. And Rupa Sanatana tried to convert him, but it didn't work. It didn't work. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also similarly tried to convert Murari Gupta, it didn't work. So he glorified him for that. But of course, you will see that within our sampradaya, those who are not Krishna Bhaktas are not gurus. Murari Gupta is not a spiritual master. Murari Gupta did not initiate disciples in our sampradaya. The primary spiritual master among the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were QCCC, chapters 11, 12, 13 describe the expansions of the tree of Nityananda Prabhu. The expansions of Nityananda Prabhu, then Advaita Acharya, then Gadadhar Pandita. These three are the primary spiritual masters among the associates of Lord Chaitanya. So yes, as far as our understanding is concerned, our rasa is concerned, we relish the Madhura Rasa the most. And that's why we will propagate that. But that doesn't mean that we denigrate or minimize other rasas. So ultimately it's a matter of aesthetics. And the path of developing aesthetic appreciation for the Lord is much, much easier. Because we don't have to suppress our emotions, we don't have to repress our emotions, we simply have to redirect our emotions.
Easier. Emotions are not repressed but redirected.
We don't say not the emotions, but we redirect them towards Krishna. So what is happening in this verse now? So, sukham atyantikam yattat buddhi grahayati indriyam. So, at that time, with one's transcendental faculties of perception, one perceives either the Brahman, either Paramatma or Bhagavan, depending on what one is following. And one experiences ultimate happiness. And then what is the characteristic of the ultimate happiness? Let us get through it. Vetti yattra, one who knows this, na chaivayam sthitash chalati tatvataha. Chalati, chalati means to move. This is to be contrasted with the characters of manad be chanchala. So there is no chalati. Sthitash chalati tatvataha. Because one has known the truth, one never departs from the truth. Yam labdhva, having attained this, chaparam labham manyate na adhikam bataha. Once having attained this, one thinks that there is nothing more to achieve. This is the ultimate achievement. And yasmin sthito na dukkhena. That once one is situated thus, gurunapi vicharyate, even the greatest dukkha does not disturb the person.
So actually, everybody in life wants to achieve something. So what is life's greatest achievement? Now we may say it is love of Krishna. Somebody may say, oh, that's your understanding.
I may think going to America is the greatest achievement of my life. I may think that becoming the wealthiest person in the country or in the world is the greatest achievement of my life. So is there some objective criteria by which you can decide what is the greatest achievement of this life?
So this verse 23 is describing that. What does it say? The greatest achievement should take us beyond hankering and lamenting. The first part is saying here,
Yam labdhva chaparam labham manyate na adhikam tatah.
It says that there is no more hankering. And then yasmin sthito dukkhena gurunapi na vichalyate.
Gurunapi vichalyate. That even the greatest misery will not disturb the person.
So, now if you look at this,
is there any achievement in the material world which has these two characteristics? If I become the wealthiest person in the whole city of Mumbai, will it free me from hankering? No. If a person becomes like anything, I want to become the wealthiest person in all of Maharashtra. Then I want to become the wealthiest person in all of India. Then all of Asia. Then all of the world. Then in all of the history of the world. And by that time I become history.
It's all over.
So ultimately there is no freedom from hankering. There is no freedom from hankering. No matter how much we achieve, there is no freedom from hankering, because how much I want more.
And recently there was a case in America of one very successful NRI, Rajat Gupta. He was a very famous businessman and he extremely successful. He had this typical career chart that is the dream of most Americans and most Indians. He was phenomenally successful, but then he engaged in severe unethical practices. And finally, when he was found guilty and he was penalized, and the American media showed it, actually the jury, there was said, for 4 or 5 years, all of them were crying. They said, we wanted to believe that he was innocent because he represented what America stands for. That a person is self-made man, works very hard and rises to the highest level of success. And they said, what is the cause that ruined him? He would have achieved phenomenal success, but it was greed. It's greed that ruined him completely. And there are, so the point is that a person may achieve a dream career chart, what most people can dream of. He had phenomenal wealth, but still the greed is so much, I want more. So yam laptva chaparam labam dhanyate nadikam vataha. That if I achieve something, then nothing more to be achieved. This never happens in material life. This never happens in material life. That is in devotional life. Once one has achieved Krishna, there is nothing more to achieve. One is completely satisfied. What is the classic example of this is? Guru Maharaj. Swamim krutathosmi varam nayache. Swami, I know I have achieved my Lord. Krutathosmi, I am satisfied. Varam nayache. I don't want anything else. So nothing can take us beyond hankering unless it is a spiritual achievement that connects us with Krishna. And what about lamentation? Is there anything material that can actually free us from all lamentation? No matter how much I achieve, ultimately there is the fear of death. And before that, there is the fear of loss of what the wealth that I have acquired, the loss of the position and the prestige that one has got. And that
fear can drive people to paranoia, to madness. So no matter how much a person achieves, one can never be free from lamentation. Because there is always the fear that will be taken away. When it is taken away, it will lead to lamentation. So Vidura is trying to instruct Dhritarashtra in Mahabharata, and he says, oh Dhritarashtra, when did this kingdom give you any happiness? He said, when you didn't have it, you were hankering for it. When you had it, you were fearful that you will lose it. And now you have lost it, you are lamenting for it. Now what is the use? So when we don't have it, we hanker. When we have it, we fear. When we lose it, we lament. Yasyam vaishuryamanayam krishne paramapuruṣe bhaktir utpatyate pumsam shokamoha bhayapaha. So it's kind of when we hear Krishna Katha, then we become free from all this. Because when our attraction to Krishna awakens, then shoka moha bhaya, all of it goes away. So actually speaking, the only achievement in life that can free us from hankering and lamentation is Krishna Prema. Because once we achieve Krishna Prema, there is nothing more to achieve. It will completely satisfy us. And not only that, there is no lamentation within industries. Yes. The body level, there will be death, there will be destruction, there can be disruption and disease. But the devotee's consciousness is beyond that. The devotee's consciousness has transcended the limits of the body. So we have Bhaktivedanta Maharaj who got melanoma cancer. You know, he told Rama, it doesn't get any better than this. And from a material point of view, it doesn't get any worse than this. To have a terrible disease like that. But because he was absorbed in the remembrance of Krishna, there was no lamentation. That is the jubilation in the face of destruction and death. That's how it happens. So, actually speaking, if one thinks rationally, then the real achievement that is worth striving for is that achievement which will take us beyond hankering and lamentation. And there is nothing except devotional advancement, except love for Krishna that can take us beyond that. And here the word manyate is important. Manyate na adhikam tataha. That once he has achieved it, he doesn't think that there is anything more to achieve. Why? Because even now when we are practicing sadhana bhakti, actually in one sense, we have achieved the ultimate thing. We have achieved the holy name. We have achieved the personal devotional service. We have achieved the association of devotees. Parikshit Maharaj is praying to the Supreme Lord and he is about to sit down to fast. He says, my dear Lord, no matter wherever I take birth again, please give me devotion to you. Affection to your devotees and compassion towards all living beings. So in the sense, we already have some of that, but we have not yet realized it. So manyate means, subjectively he understands that it is true, that actually I have got this. That will free one from all misery. And then Krishna says that tam vidya dukkha sanyoga, discusses earlier that when you get this, the yoga yoga sanyoga, when one achieves this, then one is free from all misery. One has actually disconnected oneself from all misery. And that is the perfection of life. So this is the climax. In one sense, as far as mystical visions are concerned, this verse describes this section of the Gita describes mystical visions in a most evocative way. Now there is another mystical vision that will come in the 11th chapter. That will be more dramatic and traumatic. Dramatic in terms of there's a lot of action happening, but there are all these the whole universe is visible. Rishimcha Sarva Durgamcha Divyan, and then he also sees everybody going into the mouth. But as far as say deeply spiritual visions of the highest echelons of the spiritual realm is concerned, that is revealed over here. And now Krishna, after going to that climax, comes down again. He starts describing the process. How will one attain that? So he starts with that. Sanishchayena yoktavyo.
Sanishchayena yoktavyo.
Yogo nirvinna chetasa.
Yogo nirvinna chetasa.
Sankalpa prabhavan kaman.
Sankalpa prabhavan kaman.
Yatva sarvana sheshataha.
Yatva sarvana sheshataha.
Manasaimetriya gramam.
Manasaimetriya gramam.
Vinayamya samantataha.
Vinayamya samantataha.
So, nishchayena yoktavyo. Engage determination, nishchaya, anirvind chetasa. So nirvind can mean distracted, nirvind can mean dejected, both. Let your consciousness not get distracted and not get dejected. Why?
Because on the path of yoga, this is extremely involved. Nirvinna chetasa. What happens when the yogi is trying to practice? The mind will keep going away. The mind may stray away, but let it not stay away.
It may stray away, but let it not stay away. It will go away from Krishna, but don't let it stay away from Krishna. Wherever you discredit it, bring it back. So, sanishchena yoktave yogo anirvinna chetasa. Anirvinna chetasa. Don't get dejected, don't get distracted. And how can one do that? Avoid distractions. One of the most common distraction actually is material desires. Therefore, let me give up the material desires. Sankalpa prabhavan kama. So from kama the sankalpa arises. So I want to enjoy this. Tyaktva sarvan. Give all of them up. Asheshataha. Krishna says, don't even keep any one desire. Because even one desire, as Prabhupada said, if you have a desire for eating one gulab jamun at the time of death, what will happen? You come back again to eat that gulab jamun. Of course, you know, we shouldn't become paranoid by hearing that. The idea is that if we sincerely practice Krishna consciousness, we will not have that desire. But that we need to recognize the principle. Bhagavatam gives the extreme example of Bharat Maharaj. That affection toward here causes distractions. So, sankalpa prabhavan kamam tyaktva sarvan asheshatah. Give up every single one of the desires. And how does one give up? Manasaiva indriya gramam vinyamya samudra. Indriya grama, all the senses are there. Using the mind, control them on all sides. Viniyamya samantata, on all sides. Don't let any of the senses wander away. So now, Krishna continues the description and he will tell, okay, how should we do this? Slowly, steadily. So that this verses 24, 25, 26 are very good for us to use as guides for japa. So because when the mind wanders away, shmei, so this is sanishchayana yoktu, you have to engage in determination. So in that purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes the story of the Garuda and the bird carrier. And you remember I described in the table that how there are three things, enthusiasm, faith and patience. So if there is enthusiasm without patience, then you remember I described the table? Don't remember?
It was there in Ishopach, maybe I can just draw it once again over here. You can tell me whether I discussed it or not. I'll show it here now. So, if there is no enthusiasm, there is if there is only patience without enthusiasm, that is actually the mode of ignorance. Did I discuss this earlier or no? Really? Okay, good, you told me. And there is only enthusiasm without patience. And that is
passion.
if there is both enthusiasm and patience, then that is goodness. I'm working hard, but I'm ready to wait for the results. That is goodness. And when there is there are all three: enthusiasm, patience, and faith. Then that is transcendence. So ultimately, we want to achieve this transcendence.
So utsaha nishchaya dhairya tatpat karma pravartana. That's what Rupa Goswami talks about in Deshamrit. So often, you know, we have enthusiasm for the fruits and we have patience about the work. So we want to give very good classes, but we are lazy to study.
It doesn't work like that. But
if we have enthusiastic about their duty, then the fruits will automatically come. So a devotee should be, as sadhakas, we need to be patient. We need to be enthusiastic about sadhana, but patient about the fruits. When will I start seeing Krishna? It may take time, but let me keep serving Krishna. So here, what Krishna is describing is nishchayena yukta. With determination, one should engage in it. Then one can move forward. Saha nishya dheda tipati. Now, now he talks about how one can bring the mind under control like that. Shanai shanai ruparane.
Shanai shanai ruparane.
Buddhya dhriti grihitaya.
Buddhya dhriti grihitaya.
Atma samstam mana kritva.
Atma samstam mana kritva.
Nakinchidapi chintaye.
Nakinchidapi chintaye.
Shanai shanai. This word that itself was soothing. Shanai shanai. Slowly, gradually, uparame, cease, yatra uparamate chittam. The same word was there in 6.20, yatra uparamate chittam. So, shanayashan uparame, uparame means what? Slow down, stop. Buddha dhruti grudhitaya, with intelligence sustained by conviction. Intelligence sustained by conviction. That means I have intelligence to understand that, okay, material things will not make me happy. But then, along with the intelligence, I have to have a conviction. From my own experience, from my hearing from scriptures, intelligence sustained by conviction. Pulashekara Maharaj used a very interesting logic. And he says, he's praying to his mind, my dear mind, please think of Krishna. He says, Govinde kuru chitta vritti machalam anyaistu kim vartanai. He says, my mind, let your chitta vritti become fixed on Govinda, achalam. Why? Anya is tukim vartanai. What will you gain by thinking over things? All that you will get is simply agitation, simply hankering and lamentation. Therefore, don't think about these things. So, buddhyadhiti grihitaya. Then, atma samstham. Fix the mind on atma. Why atma? Because Krishna has not yet revealed about himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Manaha kritva na kinchida vichintaya. Don't think about anything else. So, this is actually describing the state of bhaktyahar and moving forwards, inwards. Now Arjuna says, okay, but I try to fix the mind inward, but the mind doesn't stay there. The mind goes here and there and everywhere. What should I do? Then Krishna answers the next verse. Yato yato nishchalati.
Yato yato nishchalati.
Manaschanchalam asthiram.
Manaschanchalam asthiram.
Tatastato niyam yaita.
Tatastato niyam yaita.
Atmanyeva vashannaye.
Atmanyeva vashannaye.
So, yato yato. In this sort of double usage that comes sometimes, it can be rhetorical or it can have some double meaning also. Where does this double usage come? The start of a verse anywhere? Famous verse of Govinda? Yada yada hi dharmasya. So, yada yada means wherever and whenever there is decline of meaning. Similarly, Krishna is speaking here. Wherever and whenever the mind wanders. So it may wander in the morning, it may wander afternoon, evening, morning in the evening. It may wander when I am in the temple hall, it may wander anywhere. Yato yato nishchalati. Manas chanchalam asthiram. Nature of the mind is to be restless and asthiram. It is restless and I am not fixed. Tatas tato niyam yaita. Bring it back under control. Atmaneva Vashamnaye. Make the mind under the swasha of the Atma. So in one sense, if we go back to the chariot body analogy, the senses are like the charioteers and the mind is like the reins. So through the reins, we have to control the horses. Now, how is a horse bridled when a wild horse is brought in? The horse is not at all ready. Why should I carry somebody on my back? Horse throws people away. But the horse is slowly and rigidly determined, disciplined. So like that, the horse may just run here, pull it back by the saddle, pull it back by the reins. Again, pull it back. If you want to go here, pull it back. And gradually over a point of time, the horse becomes, it becomes sober. It becomes calm. It becomes docile. So the same with the senses. Although it may appear to be a struggle, but gradually something will happen. Bring it back under control. So the verses 24, 25, 26 are describing sadhana stage. And now 27 onwards we start becoming describing the siddha stage. So 27, 28, explain this. 27, 28 describe the Brahman stage. Progressive realization of the absolute truth. Okay. So 27, 28 will describe Brahman realization. Describes Paramatma realization. Thirty-one describes Bhagwan realization. So, this is a progressive revelation that goes on over here. So, let us see how he realizes the Brahman. Prashanta manasam hiyenam yoginam sukham uttamam upaiti shanta rajasam brahma bhutam akalmasham. So, let's go here. By all this practice, the previous verse is spread. Wherever the mind wanders, bring it back. But if one keeps doing like this, Prashantamanasam. Mind will become peaceful. So, Prabhupada describes how we need to train the mind. Prabhupada says, just as a lion is a ferocious man-eating animal. But in the circus, how does the circus ringmaster train the lion? Slowly, diligently. You know, it trains generally by feeding. Right? It will not get full, it doesn't okay. And by that, even if the Prabhupada says the lion, which has an innate nature of being man-eating, can be made obedient to man, then why can't our mind be made obedient to us? How is it done? By training. By training. So, by training, prashanta manasambhi, slowly, it will happen. Yoginam sukham uttamam. When the mind becomes peaceful, then one will start experiencing the sukha, that is uttama. Now uttama in normal language means best. Uttama. But in philosophical context it means uttama. Tama is darkness. Uttama is that is beyond darkness. That means that which is beyond the dark material existence. Spiritual happiness. Sukham uttamam. Upaiti shantarajasam. So what happens to Rajoguna? Rajoguna becomes peaceful, shanta. People may go to a peaceful place, but their Rajoguna is not shanta. Their Rajoguna is all there inside. But by the practice of bhakti, Shanta. And at that time one understands oneself to be Brahman. Brahma Bhutam Akalmasham. One understands. Actually there is no Kalmasham. I am the same Brahman. I am spirit. And I have got nothing to do with matter. There is no need for me to hanker for matter. So this is?
Yeah.
Brahma Bhutam Akalmasham. Now after describing this, Krishna will describe the same thing one level up here. Vajunjane vam sadatmanam Yogi vigata kalmashah
Yogi vigata kalmashah
Sukhena brahma samsparsham
Sukhena brahma samsparsham
Atyantam sukham ashnute
Atyantam sukham ashnute.
So it's a beautiful phrase over here. Sukhena brahma samsparsham. Contact with Brahma. Contact with Brahman. So what is this contact with Brahman? Actually, the Brahma samsparsham. Where does this word sparsha come in here? Yehi samsparsha jabhoga. Same word here. Contact of senses and sense objects.
So what happens by that?
In the issue of mission, of course, and this talk. We are not talking about this. The curve of material happiness versus pleasure and spiritual happiness versus pleasure. No, okay. Okay. So I'll talk about it in a minute. Let's focus on right now on this.
Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham.
So, yehi samsparsha bhoga is the contact of the senses and sense objects that gives some pleasure. But what is the problem with that? The senses are temporary, the sense objects are temporary. The senses are limited, the sense objects are limited. The only thing that is unlimited is the desire to enjoy.
There is no shortage of that desire. And because of that, the desire causes only frustration.
There's a delicious object to eat, and I have the desire to eat, and I have stomach and wish to put it in. But after some time, the delicious object gets over. You know, the delicious object doesn't get over. My stomach's capacity gets over. But the desire doesn't get over. Desire stays on and on and on. So, that's why this is will lead to frustration. But, in 6 points, Sukhena Brahma Samsparsham. So, when there is contact with Krishna, this contact of the soul with Krishna, and what is the nature of that? The soul is eternal, Krishna is eternal. The only thing lacking is the desire to serve. And because, so that's why the contact with Brahman is not a physical contact. It's an inner contact which happens by the service attitude. So right now, Krishna is there in our heart, we are also there as Atmas. But the contact is not there because there is no service attitude. As service attitude will increase, what will happen? The contact with Krishna will increase. And when the contact with Krishna increases, our happiness will increase. And this is the way one can get everlasting happiness. Because by all other paths, which ultimately involve some kind of sense gratification, some kind of contact of the senses with sense objects. If it's egoistic pleasure, it's the contact of my ego with something which titillates my ego. Actually, they cannot last eternally. So, Sukhena Brahma Samsparsha Atyantam Sukhamashnate. One experiences the ultimate happiness. So, this ultimate happiness is something, once we achieve it, nobody can take it away from us, and it will not cause us to hanker for anything more. And every day when we are chanting Hare Krishna, we will not experience happiness while we are chanting. But the chanting itself is kindling our desire to serve more and more. And, you know, what is the success of our service? When we do a service, what is the success? We can do it various ways. Okay, I go and distribute books. Then I distribute so many 100 books I distribute in one day. That's one definition of success. Second definition is that, say, everybody comes and says, Haribol, Haribol, Haribol. My name is announced in the morning at the top of the newspaper. That is also success. And somebody, my senior devotees come, my authority comes and tells, very good service, your job. That is also a success. Actually, all these are successes. But the ultimate success of our service is that it should increase our desire to serve. Our service should increase our desire to serve. If that happens, then actually the service is successful.
ultimate success of service. Not results at material level. Not recognition or appreciation. It's not that we don't want these. If they come along, that's fine. But increase of our desire to serve.
So when this happens, then if our desire to serve is increased, then Maya cannot take us away from Krishna. Because we have such a strong desire to serve Krishna that we will become tied to the lotus feet of Krishna by the desire to serve. And that is the success. So the more our desire to serve will increase, our contact with Krishna will increase, and the more we are happiness. So we'll look about the next two levels of realization in our tomorrow's class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaur Prema.